Hi, I'm Andrew Leong and welcome to Hashtag Ambitious. In this guest episode, I talk to Rhys Jones. Rhys is a business investor who invests in recruitment startups through his company, Davidson Gray. He is currently invested in 5 startup agencies and he has over 20 years experience in the recruitment industry. Before becoming an investor, Rhys ran his own successful recruitment agencies. But before we begin, I must apologise in advance. The interview was done remotely, and as Rhys was talking, sometimes for short periods, I was typing notes on my laptop to ask further questions, and the microphone picked up the keystrokes. I definitely won't be doing that again going forward. However, this doesn't take away the value of the lessons in this podcast, so I hope you enjoy it. Right, Rhys, so I have actually been thinking about this all weekend. I've been really looking forward to this because I really enjoyed the conversation last week. So I can't wait to relive it. Just for the benefit of the listeners, should we sort of start with about yourself and Davidson Gray?
Absolutely, yeah. I think if we're talking about Davidson Gray, I suppose we could maybe look back at the recruitment career I had. I worked for my first proper recruitment firm for a period, I think about 5 years, was pretty much always the biggest biller, progressed with the business to co-run it alongside my business partner, as he was, of the business that I then sold. And we felt we were never going to get what we deserved, as most recruiters feel when you get to that point where you're offered directorships, it turns out when you get offered it, it's actually not really worth anything. So at that point, we decided to set up our own business. But we kind of been working hand in hand together, running our own business for that period of time of maybe 2 or 3 years. So it was a good grounding for us. Then we went on to set up Elliott Marsh. That went fantastic for 5 years. Got to the point where it's plateauing a profit. And I think it was about 400,000 a year profit. So it's clearly was a very good business. But we plateaued and we got a little bit sort of stuck really of how to take it to the next level. So we both went to Cranfield Business School. And did a study there, or a small businesses study, where we learned all the different facets of running a business. I went into there with a certain chip on my shoulder because I didn't come from an academic background. I left school pretty much at 15. So I went there with a little bit of reservation, if you like, about what academia could teach me because I was a self-made man, as it were. And I came out completely transformed and realising that being an entrepreneur, yes, there's a certain amount of natural ability, but a lot of it you can learn. And the smartest people go to people that know more than them. And it changed me completely. It also helps that I came out of it top of my class, which I think cleared another chip off my shoulder that just because I didn't have a degree, it didn't mean I wasn't as bright as everybody else. So it really, really transformed me. I was that in love with it and did that well. I was invited back to sit on the panel for future courses to judge the other people with their business plans, which you do at the end of the course. So anyway, fast forward, but the business grew, we developed another business and that carried on for about 5 years. And then it got to the point where I think we both wanted different things. And that's when we started looking into selling the business. Mm-hmm. And we went through the whole process, met lots of people, fast forward again, and I needed to understand what I was going to do next after leaving the business because a successful exit to the business didn't need to work again. But I definitely needed to do something to keep me occupied and to exercise the grey matter. And something I learned at Cranfield University, we went through a course there to understand what you actually work for. What actually are you doing it for? Is it just money? And what came out of it for me and what was the result of this, which was very refreshing, was that I got turned on by building a legacy, developing people. And I thought I was all about fast cars and money, et cetera, et cetera. But it wasn't. It was about building a legacy. So when I left the businesses that I sold out of, it was a case of, okay, what do we do now? I can do anything I want. I can open a surf shack. I can open a pub, whatever I want to do. But I love recruitment. I love developing people. And the most exciting part of my business career was the startup phase. I'd also developed how to coach and do business strategy through Cranfield. So I've been playing with Davidson Gray for about a year or so before I left anyway, and that seemed to be absolutely perfect for me. So that's what I do now. But I set some ground rules when I set up the business. I didn't want to do what I did last time, which is scale the business and turn it into a job I didn't want. I wanted the business to be something I wanted to enjoy. And so the ground rules are, I only work with people I like, and we all know there's an awful lot of idiots in recruitment, so I only work with people that I really actually enjoy working with.
Yeah.
I also now, I'm quite disciplined about that I only work 4 days a week, and I find time to train at lunchtime to do my triathlon training. So I'm seeing this as, some people say a lifestyle business, but it's not. It's now allowing me to really put all my passion into my job and not fall out of love with it, which is easy to do, and I did do, when you're working all the hours God sends. So when I'm with the recruiters now that I set up, they've got 100% passion, 100% focus, and I can honestly say I don't think I've ever been professionally happier, because the success the businesses are having now is so much quicker and faster and exciting than when I did it, because I'm working with these guys and these girls to get them to deliver their hopes and dreams faster and with less stress, because they've got somebody who's there to make sure they don't make the same mistakes and just basically fast forward things. So at the moment, I think I've got the best job in the world, with the exclusion of playing obviously football or anything that's realistic. You know, I've got the best job in the world.
It sounds perfect. You've got the ideal setup there, and that's what we're all striving to achieve, really, isn't it? That to have our passion, but also to be able to have, like you say, it's not a lifestyle business, but to be able to fit it around a style, a lifestyle that you want, so you're kind of completely covered both, you know, your work and your life and your spirituality. So, yeah.
Well, I think it's something that I know anyway, but, and it might seem obvious, but you clearly do a much better job when you're happier and when you love what you do.
Exactly.
And although I did a very good job with the businesses when I ran them, there was a point in time when I'd sort of created a job within those businesses that I'd done, and I kind of wanted to move on, because I'm not necessarily that interested in managing people. I love strategy. I love coaching. I love looking at the next big thing that's coming along. What I don't like doing is doing the management side of it. It's just not my thing. So what I'm doing now is absolutely ideal, but I've also had that time out to step back and say, okay, well, I've got as much money as I want now. What's it all about? And it's about giving something back, and it's about creating wealth for other people, because I get a massive amount of self-satisfaction for doing that, because I absolutely adore what I'm doing, but I'm not to the point of doing too much that sometimes you can create a situation where you've got more work than you really want, and then that enjoyment just takes a shine off it a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Perfect. Right, I've got a million questions that have kind of popped out of there, but I just want to go back. You said something about being the biggest biller, so that was a little bit early on in your story. So I just wanted to ask you a question with that, because it sprung up. What made you the biggest biller in your company? What was it that you did differently from everyone else?
It's a good question, because when you're trying to create the biggest billers in your organisation, one of the things that it took me a while, if I'm honest, to cotton on is it doesn't mean making another you, because there isn't always another you. And I'm sure certain seasoned recruiters would have seen lots of very good billers that all bill well for different reasons. And if I look back at why I was successful, I think initially it was tenacity. You know, I hit the phones a lot. I was incredibly organised. But I think towards the latter end, it was because of the service I gave the customers. I always over-delivered, under-promised. I was uber reliable. Said I was going to do something, I did it. If I couldn't do it, I'd tell them before I couldn't do it. And I was particularly good at asking those additional questions that recruiters tend to forget once they become successful. Mm. Like, who do you know? Or who else do you know? Mm. When you're talking to people, you know, who else within your business is recruited? Just the little questions that when you become successful, you stop asking. But I think really it was down to being... not obsessed, but it's a massive driver for me, was giving quality all the time. And I'd got that from earlier in my career before I got into recruitment. I used to work at the Halifax Building Society. And with them, the customer was always king. And that sort of was bred into me that the customer is the most important person. So when I was a recruiter, the customer, which was both the client and the candidate, were always the most important thing. As long as I was uber reliable, then, you know, people would always come back to me. And I think that's probably a large part of it, because towards the end of my time as an employed recruiter, then it carried on for something else, self-employed, is I never really did new business. I didn't need to do new business because everybody came to me.
Which is the perfect scenario. That's the perfect marketing, really, isn't it? When you've got more inbound than you can do outbound, and everyone's coming to you, and you're known as the industry leader, basically.
Well, it's for me, it sells. You know,
completely agree.
It's great. It's great being the best salesperson in the world and opening doors, but service sells. And if you become the solution for problems for your client, then you're the go-to person, and they're never going to let another recruiter in because you provide all the solutions to the problems. And that's where I grew from starting off in sales recruitment to eventually I was doing board level. And I got involved with some of the strategic reorganisation of some of my clients. I even introduced one of my clients to one of my clients who was then a candidate, and they bought a division of Siemens together. Mm. And I brokered that. And that's the level I got to. What was by being a solution provider.
Do you think some agencies, I mean, because I myself are from a recruitment background, and do you think some agencies or some management practices maybe even hinder that service side of recruitment? I've seen it myself. I don't know what your opinion is, but people taking shortcuts to get a quick sale rather than think long term. Do you have you experienced any of that? Do you have an opinion on that at all?
Yeah, I do. And if I'm honest, it's quite a strong opinion. it's just because I've always been driven by quality. Yeah. And what I can't stand is what I call as a hit-and-run recruiters. Mm. You know, it's because the business, one of the businesses that I had, we, because of the branding that we'd done, the marketing we did, we used to get an awful lot of incoming inquiries. And I had this particular recruiter who was always billing a lot, but I found out quite quickly he was burning clients. So you'd get a client, he'd close the deal, get the retainer, maybe place it, and then get the next one, not be able to fill it, and then just leave them hanging, and the client will come back again. And I can't stand hit and run recruiters. And I think there is a certain amount of, because of the modern technology, people work very, very fast, that sometimes people do shortcut things. And also in some organisations that KPI the staff the wrong way, it all comes down to numbers, and it's not a long-term vision. Mm. And I do come across a lot of frustrated recruiters who want to set up their own companies, who will give examples where they've got a client that they know needs nurturing before it's going to turn into any real money, but they've got a manager that's cracking the head about doing more new business, getting somebody else on board, and tell them to give it up. Mm. So you, as a recruiter, yes, you've got to think, what am I going to build this month? But if you're really going to get anywhere, you've got to think long-term, because certainly you can burn clients, and if you're in a niche industry, that's going to cause you an issue. But if you want to be successful and get to that point where you're really making the good money, it's giving quality service, because your clients will come back to you, and then you spend all your time filling jobs. You're not looking for jobs because you fill them all the time. And if you get to that point, then that's when, if you want to have somebody working for you, be it a resource or a recruiter, then you can make more money, because you can then start to scale your desk. And what I mean by scale your desk, you're doing the tasks only you can do, but the tasks that maybe aren't quite so difficult, maybe looking on LinkedIn or approaching new candidates or follow up on CVs being sent in, you can let somebody else do. So as a profit centre, if you like, that's when you start to make more money. And one of the reasons why I'm passionate about recruiters building their own business is, in effect, your desk is a business. It's a mini business. You come in every day and you make commercial decisions. Do I work on this candidate? Do I work on this client? Do I look for something new? You're constantly making commercial decisions. So you are, in effect, running a business yourself. And any business is driven by commerciality, sales, and making commercial decisions. The bits that surround it, the accountants, the marketing, you can subcontract people to help you with. And that's, in effect, what I do with the people I partner with. They kind of subcontract me in a way, to look after the parts that really hold up the recruitment side of it, subsidise it, and eventually turn it from being a hot desk into a business that's self-sufficient because of the branding that's around it.
When people approach you, or when you do you approach people, what's the process for you, you know, finding a person you want to invest in, what you're looking for, or who fits your kind of perfect profile?
It's an interesting question. I should know the answer, but I don't. Because a certain amount of unconscious competence, there's a certain amount I can tell, which is a bit naff, I know, but it, personality wise, you can tell the phone quite quickly if you're likely to get on. I've got to be interested in their vision. If they just want to be a lifestyle recruiter, that's not for me, because I don't get excited by that. Because I need to feel as though I'm having value in growing that business. If it's just a case of just taking my core profit or whatever, I'm not interested. So that comes on to the other part that's important. I've got to believe they believe in me, not from a vanity point of view at all. It is, if they don't see value in me, they're not going to get the value. I won't get job satisfaction. And that leads to, further down the line, a certain amount of resentment, the fact that I'm getting my cut for not doing an awful lot. So they've got to believe in that. But it also goes hand in hand. If they believe in me and want to, in effect, hire somebody smarter than them, they're forward thinking. And I meet an awful lot of recruiters that think they just need a back office or some sort of support. Okay, well, they could probably set up a business and make profit, but they're not necessarily going to grow a really successful business if they haven't got the ability and the vision to understand that if you can hire somebody who's got more experience than you to help you, you will get there faster. But the smartest person in the room is them, because they've hired me. Because any successful business person hires people smarter than themselves. And when I say smart, I'm not more intelligent. I've just got more experience. I prefer to work with the recruiters that are smarter than me, but they just don't know it yet. And then I can upskill them to have the experience I've got, but they should be able to get that experience a damn sight quicker, because I'll coach and mentor them experience rather than how I learn, which is trial and error. Because unfortunately, pain is a far better teacher than pleasure. And I got it wrong a lot. But what I did do is I always looked at how I could have done it better. And even if it wasn't the case of I got it wrong, I'd always look back and say, how can I do this better? You know, if a member of my staff didn't work out, I wouldn't look at them. The first person to look at me is me. You know, was my selection wrong? Was the training wrong? Was the environment wrong? You know, what could I have done to make that person successful? Because at the end of the day, I hired them. And that was my choice. So if they weren't successful, I have a certain amount of the blame, regardless of how they turned out. I mean, fair enough, nobody's perfect at the interview techniques. And certainly when it comes to recruiters that understand how people get interviewed, they're very good sometimes at conning the interview. You know, recruiters are resourceful people, but I think that's an important thing that I like to see in the people that I'm working with, is that maturity, for want of a better description, to want to get somebody involved in the business and not be the all-encompassing ego that's going to run the business. At the end of the day, they have vast majority of the shares. They call the final shots. You know, they're in charge, and I'm there to make them wealthy. But it's having that ability, I think, to realise that getting somebody else on board to help them is a good idea. So I've got to like them, I've got to agree with the vision. I'm very much sure importance to me is core values, honesty, integrity. So that's important. And then there's things like the sector. You know, I'm not particularly interested in white collar, I'm more professional services. I prefer niche markets rather than necessarily generalists. So there's a certain amount of that involved. The style of the way that people recruit, that can influence it to a degree, but it's primarily down to, is the person forward thinking? Are they driven by quality? Do I like them? And do they believe in me? I'm not saying they necessarily need to like me, but do they think that I'm going to add value and we're going to build a successful business together and have fun doing it?
When you're working with your partners effectively, I'm guessing it could be different for each individual business, but what does that look like from an operational point of view? You provide the operations and the technology support, allowing them to go with the recruitment. But how hands-on are you? Does it depend on how much that person leans on you, or do you? What does that look like?
It really depends on the person. Some people want to be upskilled so they can do everything, and some people like me to carry on looking after the bits I'm particularly good at. They have no interest in. I'm certainly not there to elbow my way in somebody's business. You know, I'm quite happy to listen to the monthly board meetings, discuss them what they want to achieve next, help them achieve it by either doing it myself or helping them come up with a plan to do it, and keep myself in the background. Or as an example with Taylor Higson, I'm in there most weeks. You know, that could be coaching, mentoring some of the staff, coaching, mentoring Jonathan. There's certain parts of the business that he knows I'm good at and he likes me to look after, for example, marketing and finance. And he's an incredibly good biller. He's amazing at attracting staff, and he runs a great office environment. And we've fallen into this very nice partnership where he does what he's good at and what he enjoys. and I do the other stuff, which I happen to enjoy as well. So that's great. And we're very successful because of that. But there's other businesses that don't necessarily want quite as much involvement as that. So it is a case of it's down to the business owner how much involvement they have. But it does come back to the fact they've got to get some value from me. Be it, you know, helping with the marketing, looking at cash flow forecasts, which sounds very fancy, but it's just a simple case of making sure you know how much money you'll have next month or the month after, and not getting quiet with your VAT. Simple things like that. But it varies. I mean, an example of some of the more hands-on things I do, it is Jonathan finds great value in me doing a second or third interview for people who want to join his business. One, because he rates my opinion, but also he finds that it helps in the courting process, because good recruiters have got to be courted because they're in high demand, for them to see that it's not only Jonathan with his passion, his youthful enthusiasm, there's an older guy with a grey hair and a CV in the background that's the safe pair of hands, but also has the experience to deliver on the vision that Jonathan's got. So rather than Jonathan saying, this is where the business is going, and sounding very enthusiastic and likeable about it, that they can meet the older grey guy in the corner, if you like, the CV, who can put some more believability, for a better description, on what is actually going to be delivered. And it is actually going to get delivered the way Jonathan says. So, and that's helped a lot in converting the interested candidates into people that accept jobs, because the biggest barrier to growth for any recruitment company is hiring good staff. That's one thing I found when I was growing my business, is hiring good staff. And if you're going to go for experienced recruiters, it's so competitive to get good recruiters. I mean, there's obviously an awful lot of rector recs out there. You can make direct approaches. We've all seen recruiters that can go from job to job to job to job and still get paid a bomb, because recruitment business owners are far too quick at hiring anybody that they think can potentially make them some money. So when you've got somebody out there who is good, it's very, very difficult to secure them. So getting me involved in the process is where I can help. It is in securing those really key recruitment staff that any self-sufficient recruiter now that runs a hot desk, that can transfer that desk, they're going to have a queue of employers waiting to offer them jobs. And how do you differentiate yourself? And me getting involved with the process with Jonathan, he says, and I think it is too, is a big differentiator, because they meet Jonathan with all his charisma and his passion, and then I've got the experience of growing businesses. So it makes what Jonathan is saying believable by meeting me, because I am there to help him deliver on it, because I've done it before. And that, I think, has given Jonathan a big step up in hiring these additional staff. And his ratio of meeting people to then join the business is incredibly high, I think, because we work so well together. But that won't be the case with every company, because some companies might just simply want to hire staff and not get me involved, because that's how they want to run the business. At the end of the day, it is their business. So as much as I can mentor or coach, ultimately they have to make their own decisions. Otherwise, there's no point.
You mentioned differentiation there, and I think it's quite difficult for, this is just my opinion, for recruitment businesses to differentiate themselves from other recruitment businesses, because pretty much everyone follows the same process. So in your experience, do you agree or disagree with that statement? And if you have got any advice, what do you think a recruitment business can do to be different in 2018 or going forward?
Well, I think there's probably two avenues to that question. There's how can it be different in delivery, so how the client experience them, or how they can be different in attracting business. And the two are fairly different, to be fair. As far as delivery, there's new technologies so they can add value to the process. There's ensuring that there's good training going on within the companies. There's an emphasis on integrity. And this is more of the soft side. And then there's the how do you attract more business that's different to everybody else? And that's when you can get involved with the digital marketing, the PR, organising events, that sort of thing. So there's a lot on both sides you can do as a differentiator. And I think to answer both those questions properly, it's not one I could do in one podcast. They'd both be completely one podcast, if not a series, added together. but as far as differentiator goes, I know obviously I'm speaking to a marketing person, I do feel that the vast majority of recruitment companies don't know how to market themselves. So maybe some of the bigger businesses, your Michael Page of this world, you know, who are stock market listed, and therefore they've got a bank of excellent marketing people, they know what to do. But certainly SME businesses and some large independents, they still rely very much on the recruiters doing the marketing rather than actually marketing the business themselves. Because the marketing, yes, it starts at the coal face, but the employer and business owner really has a responsibility for the business as a whole to have an overlooking view on brand building and marketing. And the vast majority of recruitment businesses don't, because the people that own recruitment businesses are recruitment consultants. They're not marketeers. So they look at it as a recruiter. And that's where I like to think I can add a lot of value to the businesses that I work with, because the marketing for the startup businesses, I market the business and brand build it for the business that they want it to be in 5 years' time, not the business now. So the amount of business that they're getting coming through that brand building and digital marketing, even from the outset, is very, very high. Because one of the mantras I have with the businesses that help grow is you want to make it an easy place to make money. So you can have average recruiters making good money, and good recruiters making a lot of money, but also it's done in such a way that it isn't necessarily just reliant on the people, that if somebody walks out the door, it's not necessarily going to take the money with it. The brand is within the business, and an awful lot of the reason they're successful is incoming inquiries from clients and incoming inquiries from candidates. And it's not an easy thing to do. It is complicated, and it's a different profession. You know better than I do. It is a different profession, and I think it's very exciting, but it's difficult when you are a trained, bred recruiter to see that when you know how you were successful, which is smashing the phones. So I think growing a business, that's a differentiator. But I also think on the delivery side is ensuring that there is that credible repeatability. So you don't have the hit-and-run recruiters in your business that are damaging the brand. I had a hit-and-run recruiter in my business, and he was one of the biggest billers. But I let him go because I could see that he was damaging the greater good. And sometimes you've got to have the strength of character when you're growing a business. If somebody isn't good for the business as a whole, then you have to let a person go.
Completely agree with that. Yeah, completely agree. So that really leads me on to my next question then. So do you think, we both know recruitment is very entrepreneurial, but do you think all big billers could have the ability to run their own recruitment business, or is it, you know, unique to a select few?
Could all big billers become successful business owners, grow their own business? The answer to that is no. A lot of it is down to the personality traits of a recruiter. To be able to run a business, you've got to be able to do other things other than just smash the phones. And that's keep an eye on everything else. Now, fair if you partner with me, I keep the eye on everything else for you. But it comes back to some of the other personality traits, which is employing people best than yourself, not being quite so focused on your own desk. I mean, being a super biller, more often than not, you're blinkered. Now, not everybody, but you've got to be fairly selfish to be a big biller. And that doesn't necessarily go hand in hand in growing a business. Also, some people, they can't handle the emotional side of being ultimately responsible for what they do. Because it is very nice to go into a business where everything's done for you as far as the database, the accountancy, who pays the bills, etc. And all you've got to do is bill. And that's why I don't encourage people to set up their own companies. What I do is I coach people and talk to them when they come to me and say, I want to grow a business, say, why do you want to do it? And I help them to have a proper think whether it is for them, because setting up your own recruitment company and failing, it's just, that's something I can never be involved with, is somebody who has to make sure that they are 100% emotionally right to run their own recruitment business. I think from a skills point of view, virtually all good recruiters have the skills, but I think it's been able to put it all together in the package, because running your own business is a very different job. If you have a business partner's experience like me, okay, that makes it a bit different. But it is a different job. And certainly if you're setting up on your own, you're trying to learn to do a new job with nobody there to show you how to do it when the pressure's on, because it's down to you to make the money, otherwise you don't pay your mortgage. So it is quite a step if you go into it gung-ho. And this is where I come across some of the idiot recruiters, that because they've been massively successful, and because successful recruiters now are treated very well because they can't walk out the door, they do have a certain amount of immortal persona where they feel that they can't fail. And they'll go out and they cut corners and think everything's going to be easy, and then the 4,000 VAT bills come or something like that. Mm. But I think with the right support, most can. But I think it just come down to a little bit more to their beliefs, what they really want, are they prepared to change. And this is where there's a certain amount of subconscious and unconscious competence that I've got when I'm talking to people, to sort of see the ones that I think will be able to do it and the ones that won't, because it's not necessarily what they say, it's what they believe. And it's trying to get under that skin of trying to find out really how they would be if, in an environment where ultimately they are in charge.
Yeah. I'm really interested. So we're talking a lot about the recruitment businesses that you invest in. I'm really interested to know when you start to Davidson Gray. So I can imagine you're getting inundated with offers now, especially knowing you as a person and your experience. I mean, it's a no-brainer if you wanted a partner or investor. But when you first started Davidson Gray, how did you get your first partner? How did that come about?
Well, funny enough, it was Jonathan Taylor.
Okay.
and that was an easy one because I tried to hire him a couple of times at the business, and I always wanted to work with him because I knew he could be successful and I liked him. So pretty much the first phone call I made was to Jonathan, said, I've set up this new business and I'm looking to back recruiters. Can I have a chat with you? And I signed him up. So that one was easy. After that, it was a very, very slow start because I didn't want to do direct sales to try and tempt people to set up their own, because I wanted people to come to me because they were ready to set up their own business. So a lot of it was marketing. And marketing, you'll know, takes time. And I was experimenting with marketing, so it was a bit slow. And to be fair, for the first couple of years, I was taking Davidson Gray quite lightly because I needed, I think, a little bit of a break because I'd worked so hard on my recruitment career. I didn't really want to go straight into working 100%. So I took it a bit softly. But no, it's the brand building and the marketing did take quite a long time to get to where it is now, where you're quite right, I do get an awful lot of approaches. I'm very fortunate in that respect. But at first, it was slow going. Because I'm not ignorant to the fact that some business owners see what Davidson Gray do or some of the other companies that set up recruiters and think, oh, I'll have a go at that because I'm running my own business. And they do it as a sort of an aside to what they do. And it's nowhere near as easy as you think, because it's attracting the right people and giving them the time to help them grow. Because if you're just going to do back office, people will fail. You've got to mentor and coach them and work alongside them and help them to be successful. And that takes time and that takes focus. And if you're running your own recruitment company, I think it's a difficult thing to do, which is one of the reasons why I sold that when I did, because I started to play with Davidson Gray and I kind of wanted to do it and I couldn't do it whilst running a recruitment business. And that's why I'm passionate there that anybody that wants to do what I do, you've got to do 100%. And if you're going to do it alongside something else, then I don't think you're really doing the people justice that you're backing.
Yeah, completely. I can imagine. Because you're involved with that many different startups. I mean, doing one is hard enough, but when you've got several. So how do you manage that, if you don't mind me asking? How do you put on so many different hats? And how does it work
for
you?
Well, that's why I'm going to cap it. I mean, I've currently got five. Five, one going live in September the 1st. And I think another two. And I suspect then that will be my limit for my own personal time. At that point, if I can find somebody who has the same vision as me to work alongside, be fine. But they won't work with the partners I've already signed up because they've signed up with me. They've not signed up with anybody else.
Yeah.
But I have got to make sure I manage my time correctly, that I have the most outstanding PA that works with me. I'm looking to hire somebody in September to help me, again, with more business support and more marketing. So I have the time to work on each business's strategy with them, because each business strategy is a little different because they're in different markets and it's different people, because the strategy is dictated by the market and the way that they want to grow the business. So it's got to be bespoke to each person. So that takes time. But also I'm trying to look at the next innovation for all the businesses, whether this is on delivery, technology, marketing, what it might be. And that takes time. And it's the thinking time that's hard to find, because I'm going to write a blog, hopefully next month, on how to build your business or double the value of your business one day a month. And that's to grab the attention. But basically, it's, if you spend one day a month working on your business rather than in it, that's when you get the results. But the, trying to find time to work on your business, that thinking time, is so difficult because recruitment's so fast. There's always something going on. And that's where I've got to be incredibly careful that I don't start being busy, busy, busy again, that have the time to sit back and to look at new innovations, to look at new technologies, to listen more to what the business owner is saying and not saying, and how we can evolve their business, and coaching them slowly rather than quickly, because it's too easy to show somebody how to do something, but really coaching somebody is getting them to think for themselves. So it is their answers, and also they know how to do it next time rather than you giving all the answers. And that takes time, and you've got to make that quality time. So if I'm honest, it's something that I always have to be conscious of, because time management for any recruitment consultant or business owner is something that can always slip, and you end up doing the things you enjoy rather than things that you should do. You don't give enough time for some of the things that take time, other things. It's time management is never an easy thing. And I do have to focus to make sure that I have enough wiggle room, that I've always got that thinking time to work with the businesses. So they've got a new challenge or they've got a new opportunity, I've got time to think about it and give it some serious thought and look at how we can work on it, to then go back to the business partner and have another discussion about what we can do about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So with your business partners then, do they... We're starting a new business. Do they find it difficult to stay at big picture level? Do they go reverting back to hitting the phones? Or is everyone different? How do they deal with it?
Everybody is different, but it's I wouldn't say easily solved, but if you have really good quality board meetings, and board meetings sounds a little bit highfalutin, just call it business planning meetings, but if you have a good quality meeting once a month, where you review where you are, and from that comes actions, and those actions are minuted so everybody knows what they are. And these are decided by the directors, not by me, what these actions are. I'm not giving them things to do. They decide what's good for the business. And then you're mutually held accountable to make sure they get done for the next month. You're making steps forward. During those meetings, I will bring up the sort of the medium and long-term strategies that are boiled down to short-term strategies, if you like. So I do help coach and mentor in that one day a month that I talk about to work on the bigger picture. And when I say one day a month, to be fair, the board meetings quite often only last a couple of hours, because I put so much prep in before we have the meetings that we're really efficient when we get there. I found that people are naturally either short-sighted or long-sighted. You get some people that always look... I mean, it's like recruiters. Sometimes they're always looking at the big accounts and the big placements, and they don't bother the small ones. And they get caught out because they're always looking long-term and they haven't got enough money coming through the door. You get short-term people who won't account build. That's natural. So to help people to do both, naturally, people are predominantly one. But with the board meetings, it helps people do the three, which is the short, the medium, and the long.
In your position, you're talking to so many different people, I can imagine, and in recruitment, the different businesses that you've got, they'll be speaking to so many different people. Business creates business. Are you just staying in recruitment, or, are other offers coming your way? Any other opportunities which are outside of recruitment?
I do get them. I mean, I have done work outside of recruitment. I was non-exec for a point-of-sale company. I got the experience of working with business outside recruitment when I did my work at Cranfield University after I graduated. And I do get offered external work from time to time, but I love recruitment, which might sound a bit geeky, but I really love what I do. And also, I'm not ignorant to the fact that, okay, yes, I'm a professional business builder, but I'm not an expert in, for example, technology, because I get so many approaches from people with new tech. And I don't understand how necessarily to grow the branding for an app, for example. So I'm conscious to, because I always need to give value. And if I'm not going to give value and I'm not confident in that, I don't really want to get involved. So I wouldn't say I won't do other work. When I will do other work, for definite, is if it's involved with the entrepreneurs that run recruitment companies. I mean, it's one of the businesses, Older Point. they are now brokering land deals because they have such an amazing network of contacts that they know people that want to buy land, they know people want to sell land. So it's the natural step as introducers to do the land brokering. And that was a lot harder than we thought. It's a harder market to get into, but with the correct business strategy, which we've been honing in the last 12 months, it started to take fire. Now, clearly, we've got to put the emphasis on the recruitment side for the time being because that's what pays the bills. But that is an avenue that the co-directors there, Dan and Anthony, wanted to look into. And they told me their idea and their strategy, and I believed in them. So as a board now, we do work on that, and we're working it more and more as the business grows. We've just got to get the timing right and get the share of emphasis right. But if the business builders that I'm working with, the entrepreneurs, the recruiters, want to work in other sectors, it is my job then, because I am their business partner, to help them grow businesses outside recruitment.
Mm. Okay, that's really, really interesting. I have to keep an eye on that for you, just out of interest, because I'm into property and land myself. I've just got a couple more questions. I don't want to keep you on too long. It's just more about you as a person now, to be honest with you, rather than Davidson Gray. I mean, you've got so much experience, and to be as successful as you are, you must have had some failures along the way, or mistakes or learnings. What's your biggest one?
Oh, do you know, I've made so many, I can't think. do you know what? I'm very rarely lost for words, but I couldn't pick out anything really obvious. I have made a lot of mistakes. You know, there's that shadow of a doubt. I think one of them that really stands out is when the business I was MD of at the time, Elliot Marsh, was incredibly successful. You know, we had inquiries coming out of our ears, we're making a pile of money. It became too easy. Because it became too easy, I took my eye off the ball. Mm. And when the credit crunch happened and the construction crash happened, because at the time Elliot Marsh was very construction-led, and I had to downsize and streamline to rebuild again, I could then see all the mistakes I'd made in being metaphorically fat and lazy with the business. And that then taught me much, much more than growing it, was having to downside and see the things that I weren't doing well when it was easy. I was like, for example, the resourcing division, we staffed up far too quickly. There was people in there that weren't necessarily efficient. There was far too much technology that wasn't necessarily paying for itself. There was things that I dubbed because it was too easy. And when everything is too easy, it's easy to get lazy. But when it's taken away from you, next time it's easy, you're not lazy anymore. So with the businesses that I'm growing now, as they're successful, when it comes very, very easy for the business owner to spend a lot of money on new staff and new technologies, I'm there to help them be a little bit more prudent in the way that they do it. It's ultimately their decision, which I keep stressing. But what I will be there is to help them to measure the things they spend on. So measure that the people they are employing are productive, the technologies are productive, the marketing is productive, because if what you don't measure, you can't manage. And people say that, but people don't necessarily use it. And if you've got to spend on whatever it is, you've got to know if it's successful or not. And the way I went when the business was making so much money, I had a certain degree of immortality because I'd come out of Cranfield, I was top of the class, the business was making shed loads of cash, I couldn't grow fast enough. It was all too easy. So it was too easy to make decisions through gut feel and emotion rather than maintaining that measuring of success of the things that you're doing. And I think that was a lesson that was difficult to learn, and it's not an obvious one. But I see it a lot in businesses in general that I have nothing to do with, in recruitment, where they become successful, the business owners become demigods, and they start to make mistakes, but they don't know the mistakes until things go wrong. And the problem with a recruitment company, when it starts to fail, it can fail very quickly, because as soon as people start leaving, people get nervous. When they get nervous, all the best billers leave because they can find jobs. That's the weak ones left over. So the business isn't profitable. It's probably got very high running costs. And you can have a very successful business that can fall off the cliff amazingly quickly. And I was fortunate enough that I had enough structure in the business that it was never going to do that. But the fact it had to go backwards to go forwards was a great education for me, because as I said before, pain is a far better teacher than pleasure, and I don't do failure, whether it's my business, somebody else's business, whether it's sport, wherever it is. You know, I've got to be the best I can be, and anything that I count personally as failure is not acceptable for me. And at that point in time, it did feel like a bit of a failure because I had to reshape it, which was ridiculous because it was a construction business in the construction crash with a credit crunch, you know. So it was bound to be affected. Every recruitment business was affected, well, pretty much every business was affected. But it certainly held the mirror up to me of how much I thought I was a brilliant business leader, but I had so much more to learn. And that lesson saved me, because as much as you might think either, you know, you've made it all in recruitment, whether it be a biller, whether it be a business owner, whatever it might be, you're still learning every day and every week. And that was another good sort of epiphany, if you like, of how much there always is still to learn, and you should never think that you know it all. And I've got a thirst for improvement and development, and I had the thirst in development and improvement then, but I wasn't doing it as wisely as I could have done, because I was getting carried away myself. My ego had got a little too big. I had too much confidence. And with confidence becomes complacency. I remember speaking to a surgeon who's going to work on my back, and he's a very, very senior surgeon. He said that when he's talking to his students, he said that the biggest risk that you have in any hospital to accidents is complacency above anything else. And when you're running a business, as soon as you get complacent, mistakes happen. Now, fair, if you haven't got to be super focused all the time, but that was a good education for me, was having to take those backward steps.
That was a really interesting answer. I'm glad I asked that question. That was brilliant. Thank you, Reed. So what's next for you? What's next for you? What's next for Davidson Gray? What's happening?
Well, I've got this business going live in September, which I'm working on. I won't say around the clock, because I said I work 4 days a week, but I'm working really, really hard to get that ready, because when I launch a business, for me, I want it to be like Usain Bolt as he was on the blocks. That as soon as the gun goes, you're off. There's no distraction, everything's perfect. So I'm getting everything absolutely spot on for that. But my eye is on the next two businesses, which, because I am starting to get an awful lot of inquiries, that might come fairly quickly. What do I do then? Well, I have an idea to write a book, which I've spoken to you briefly about. I still want to do that, but I only want to do that when I've got enough time to do that. There's advances in the marketing I want to carry on doing, because I really have a thirst for knowledge when it comes to marketing. But I think at that point, it is going to be a case of, unfortunately, Davidson Gray will have to close the doors unless I find somebody else who has the same attitude to growing businesses that I have. I have reached out before, and I found one chap that it came close, but he couldn't exit his current business that he'd sold. He was on an earnout. But at that point, I might start looking a little bit harder for somebody who wants to help, because without sounding like Davidson Gray's a charity, because it's not, but you know what I don't want is good, honest, hardworking recruiters who want to the next big thing, knocking on my door and I can't help them. And they go off and not successful as they could have been because they haven't got the right people working with them, or they've got nobody at all. So I would like somebody else to work with me, whether it be on a partnership, whether it be on a license agreement, franchise, whatever it might be. I mean, they've got to share the same ethics as me. But that would be the natural next step. But I think sometimes you've got to understand when you've got what you wanted. And when I get to those seven businesses, I will probably feel as though I've got what I wanted, which is, you know, hopefully seven businesses with a board of directors that run those businesses that I got really well with, that I get a massive kick out of making those businesses successful. I can continue learning myself because I need to keep developing to help develop those businesses whilst enjoying the life that I've got, which is working incredibly hard and very passionate when I'm in it, but also have enough energy and time to do the things I enjoy out of it, like doing the triathlons that I do, which I absolutely love doing, but it takes an awful lot of time and effort to do that. And other things that I do with private life. So there's nothing really massive on the horizon, because I'm going to stay true to every promise that I've made to the partners that I've set up, which is, you know, you partner with me, so I'll always be there to be your business partner. I'm not going to run off into the beyond, if you like, when the next opportunity comes along. Because I love what I do, and I'm very, 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 very fortunate that I absolutely love what I do. And there's nothing out there really I want to do beyond this.
If anyone wants to reach out to you, then what I mean, unless you don't want to tell anyone because you're already inundated, but if anyone does want to reach out to you, what's the best way?
Just probably something on LinkedIn. I'm not ridiculously inundated, because you can usually tell quite quickly some inquiries that are realistic, some that aren't, and people that aren't. You know, I'm certainly very polite and point them in a direction that might be able to help them or give them some honest advice. But no, it's the best bit is just through LinkedIn.
Just
through LinkedIn.
Right, well, I'll drop your LinkedIn link in the description if that's okay with you, and then just give anyone the opportunity to reach out and for you to put them in the right direction if that's okay with yourself.
I'd love that, because I am in that position now where I can see I'm close to that point of having the 7 partners, and that's when I can pretty much turn off a lot of what I do with Davidson Grace by dealing with inquiries and marketing. So that means I'll have even more time then. Because obviously I have to have time to deal with inquiries, and there's a certain amount of marketing involved in Davidson Grey. But I'd rather spend that with the businesses. So if I can find 2 new businesses to set up, which I'm hoping to do in the next 6 months, 9 months, because I'm incredibly choosy, then I'll be delighted.
Brilliant. Rhys, this has been, I've thoroughly enjoyed this. There's so much gold in this episode. I absolutely love it. Is there anything else you want to share before we end it? Is there any tips or anything that you just want to get off your chest?
I think, to be fair, you've asked some really, I mean, I've been interviewed before on a podcast, but I think you've asked the most intelligent questions without sounding like I'm kissing your bum. But no, it's allowed me to come up with, I suppose, a fair chunk of stuff that, because I'm very much about sharing what I've done to help other people. And sometimes it's not easy necessarily to get that across without sounding like you're popping on about how good you are. But the way you've asked the questions has allowed me to maybe share some of the stuff that people might find useful. Because it's like the blogs I've got on my website. The blogs I've got on my website aren't maybe like a lot of blogs that are really just tasters to hook somebody in to ask for more. They actually are educational. And they are written to help people. They're not written in marketing tools for Davidson Grey. Yes, they attract people to Davidson Grey, but they are there for people to learn from. So if you want to set up your own recruitment company and you don't want to work with me, then there are an awful lot of guides on there about writing business plans, forecasts, cash, how to coach people, you know, marketing. There's so much on there. And that is what I'm really trying to do, is to help as many people as I can. Again, without sounding like I'm some sort of evangelical charity guy that's trying to change the recruitment world. You know, I can't pretend that I am that. But what I do want to do is to help people benefit from my experience in a way that the people that want to learn and want to get better can just take a little bit of what I can share in the small amount of social media groups I've got to get that message out, if you like.
To be honest with you, I think that is a breath of fresh air, and just in my personal opinion, I think the recruitment industry needs that. As you touched on before, there's a few interesting characters in the recruitment world, and it's the good people that understand service that stand out. So I'm thoroughly a big fan of your work and what you do.
I appreciate that, Andrew. The recruitment industry does get tarnished with a bad brush, but unfortunately, you do tend to find amongst the people that have made it, because they've grown into an environment where, going back to what I said earlier about being immortal, because when you become successful, people tend to kiss your bum and you start to think you're a bit special, you're a bit something else, and you've got money and you feel as though you've got power. Unfortunately, I've seen a lot of very nice, good people, when they become successful, turn into idiots. And it's unfortunate when they get to that point where they can give people a lift up, they're too busy to put the foot on somebody's head to push them back down again so they can stay up there. And it is a shame, but unfortunately, I think because the recruitment market is so competitive, that it does breed a certain degree of that, which is very unfortunate. But I'm a big believer that, you know, what goes around comes around, all that stuff. That, you know, the people that appreciate their staff and look after their staff will be successful, but the ones that don't, they won't get caught out tomorrow or next week or maybe next year. But if people don't respect the people that work with them, then eventually you become a cropper. Not everybody, but a lot of people. So hopefully it could be a bit of a positive selection process that you get some better people running business.
Brilliant. No, completely agree.
I've enjoyed our chat, Andrew. I enjoyed meeting you today as well.